I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
It was the best of times. It was the worst.
She was the people's princess.
She'll fight on the beaches.
Oh, Eamon, these are the things that made England.
She'll fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Okay, hello, this is David Crowther here, the things that made England. And on the other end of the line, I've got somebody.
That somebody would be me, and my name is Roy Field. Hello, David.
Oh, Roy Field, I've missed you.
That's not true. I don't know how you can miss someone you've only ever met once in your life, and that was somewhat fleeting.
It wasn't that fleeting. We spent the afternoon walking around Notting Hill, and I saw the door.
No, that is true. We walked around Notting Hill almost arm in arm. We were like bros together,
yes,
weren't we?
We were. And you were doing that thing just like Hugh. You were walking down Notting Hill saying hi, blah, blah, hi, booty poo, whatever, you know.
Booty poo?
Well, you know, I was trying to think. Go ahead. Notting Hill.
All those people who I said hello to were all staged and they were primed. And I says, I need to impress this bloke that's coming down from Oxford. So pretend like
right?
You know me.
Flipped them all a tenner.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah. No, you know what? I've lived in Notting Hill on and off for some 20-odd years, 22, 23 years. Now I don't really live there anymore. Still own a place there. But no, in lots of ways, it'll always be home.
So what do they call somebody who comes from Notting Hill? Do they call them a hiller or a notter?
They call them bloody cool.
They really don't. Anyway, so we have, I had a couple of things, kind of bones I needed to pick.
Okay.
Number one was, I thought we should have some rules.
Yes, David.
I really thought we should have some rules because it's been...
I'm much more punk than
much
you.
Aggression.
Well, none of the aggression came from my part, but if you feel that you need rules to, you know, hold yourself in check, feel free. Rule away, sir.
Okay, so the rules away. So we're going to try and be more structured. We're going to try and put the argument together, and then away we go. Also, I need to do something for Steve. Is it Steve or is it Ken? So I need to say, this is David Crowther, Things That Made England. How does he actually do it? Do you know, I don't think I've ever actually watched him. How does he actually do it?
That was pretty good. I knew who you were trying to ape. So well done, sir.
I will send a bit of aping.
Have you finished your bit?
My bit. What do you mean by my bit?
Your pre the meat of the show bit.
My preamble. Mm. I've done my ambling.
Well, I think there is a massive ambiguity in what constitutes making a country. We've kind of half addressed this before. What you said in our promo preamble, which is some of these things which we're going to nominate are not unique only to England, but they are what makes England English, to paraphrase. It's kind of what you said. Just because it's not the Magna Carta necessarily doesn't mean that it's not something which is quintessentially English.
So you're talking about the rules, aren't you? Which we do get up about, and I do kind of think it is like the British Constitution here. You know, we don't quite know what it is, but we know what it is when we see it. You know, I agree with you that basically what we're talking about things here, which are things which together go to make up England. They are not necessarily unique in themselves, but with the exception of most of the things you proposed, they are nonetheless a core part of what it is to be English. I've just been aggressive. I must have taken a pill or something. You bring out
the... Do I just bring out the worst in you? Yeah, I do, don't I?
Darling. Right, so we've got the rules sorted. So people are probably wondering, you know, shall I go and make a cup of tea until they get on with it? So shall we get on with it?
Yeah, let's do this.
Let's do it. So this is this is me, my proposition. And I'm going to propose to you today, Roy Field, queuing. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to tell you why.
Okay.
Actually, our normal sort of template is the first thing we talk about, what is it? I think we all know what queuing is. You might well ask me, you know, why am I going to propose queuing? Well, look, I think England's got a bit of a reputation for queuing because although I'm sure there are other nations that do queue very well, Canada, good queuers, Singaporeans, good queuers. Here's a chap called George Mikus, Hungarian, an Englishman, even if he is alone, forms an orderly queue of one. I think that brings home the Englishness. People think that queues are a sign of a dull, compliant, unexciting people. This is not true, Roy, this is not true. They are a jungle. They are the ultimate expression of English social rules. They are English civilization. And if you understand queuing, what's going on in an English queue, they are the golden key to unlock the English character.
It's a very big claim. Lots of the world looking and remarking on us queuing is only really post the Second World War. There's like a couple of famous studies that were remarking on how we were queuing for rations after the war and how orderly it was,
right,
as opposed to it being a total bun fight. The fact that, you know, people weren't starving.
Sure, that's because we were already queuers.
But it's that kind of social observation in terms of a national characteristic that before the Second World War, other countries don't remark on our queuing. So maybe that's just because they had better things to do, like decolonize themselves or, you know. but anyway, I defer to you. This is your shout, sir. I will back away from the microphone.
Do you clean your shoes just while we're on the topic?
Do I clean my shoes?
Yes, clean your shoes.
Yes, but I hardly ever wear leather shoes anymore. So I did get out some special wipes to do my trainers the other day.
And I want to hear about your special wipes. Okay, so I read a book, which is what you do, by somebody called Kate Fox. She's brilliant. If you want to understand the English and how they work, she is the person who knows. No other book on the English will tell you, except for Kate Fox is watching the English, okay? So I turned to my well-thumbed copy, and in there was an anecdote. Do you remember what happened in London in August 2011? Does that ring any bells?
August 2011. Riots? Yes, the riots.
That's it. Okay, so Kate Fox, being an anthropologist, the riots are happening, everything's going potty, and out she goes into the riots in order to observe what was going on. And she said that she witnessed looters forming an orderly queue to squeeze one at a time through the smashed windows of the shop they were looting. Which is nice, but that is how strong queuing is. There are a number of different types of queue. Mm-hmm. So the thing that Bill Bryson, you know Bill Bryson?
Well, I know of his work, sir.
And he's, you know, one of those rare people who likes the English. There aren't many of them. I mean, there's Alan, obviously, and then there's George.
I tell you what, you know, we haven't got many friends left in Europe.
We didn't have many. We kind of lost the few remaining ones we did have. Anyway, Bill identifies the composite queue as the ultimate expression of Englishness. The composite queue?
Mm-hmm.
and let's say you're going up to get some money out of a bank machine, yeah? Cash machine.
Yes.
And there are four bank machines. What do? You stand off to one side so that people form a queue behind you to all four. You don't do four queues. You just do one queue so that people get as soon as quickly and as fairly as possible. There's none of that chasing queues, which is the fastest queue thing. That is the ultimate expression of English sense of fairness, but more important, getting over the hideous tension of parallel queues, of which there is nothing worse. I'm sure you'll agree. There's nothing worse than thinking I've chosen the wrong queue, is there?
Well, there are many things worse.
Well,
early onset of dementia will be something which is ultimately worse.
Amputation, no. The tension of parallel queues, Roy Field.
I would say that there is a certain amount of tension, and we've all been in the supermarket and you judge, before you actually hit a queue, you have to scan very quickly and say, which one of these is going to move the quickest? So you look and you see not only how many people are in that each line, what they have in their basket and how old they are. Because if they're old, they're going to take
their
time.
There's an algorithm, isn't there? You're so right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Age? Hey, this is terribly ageist of us, especially given the fact that, you know, I'm getting on a bit. Age, number of stuff in the what's it, speed of the assistant.
Mm.
Yeah, all important. You're absolutely right. The bar queue. So there are areas, are there not, Royfield, where the normal rules should break down. One of those is the bar queue. So you're in a bar in London, it's all very busy. Is everybody queuing? Or are they not?
Well, they don't, do they? Nobody queues at a bar. You might queue to get into a bar /club, but whilst you're in, then you do not queue at the bar.
Right, that is so wrong. So wrong. I'm delighted you said that, Roy Field, because then I can say you're wrong in England.
No, but David, what you're about to say is people get served in order. Exactly. That's not the same as a queue.
It is exactly the same as a queue. Everybody knows who's next. It can be chaos, but everybody knows who is next. There is a very strict etiquette in attracting the attention of the bar guy. So you can't speak. You're not allowed to say, you know, hey, I'm next, because that would be hideously embarrassing. You have to gesticulate. You kind of have to raise your eyebrows or do a little, you know, put your finger up. You must not shout. But everybody knows who's next. And if somebody gets served first, you know, there is internal mayhem. I say internal mayhem. We'll come on to the Englishman objecting to queue jumpers in just a moment.
Internal mayhem where? In terms of your own psyche, in terms of your own self-worth or society?
In the Englishman's breast. Turmoil. That person.
Right. Okay. So how do English women take this?
Okay. Internal turmoil, the English inside the English person's breast. Accurate, you're absolutely right. Because there's nothing worse, isn't there, than queue jumping? You know, that is the ultimate crime, isn't it? Let's say you see a bit of queue jumping going on. What are the sort of things that you notice? What's the sort of general reaction of the English queue?
Very loud tutting.
Tutting, yes, that's the ultimate.
Yeah, very loud tutting. Yeah. And then one very brave soul will say, there's a queue here, mate. But it's always just one person that is brave enough.
Do you know, I've never seen it. Maybe I have seen that once or twice. Do you know, I bet you're the kind of guy who would say that, aren't you? Would you say that?
David, it really depends on what I'm queuing for.
Does it? Is that right?
Right. It really depends. Yeah, I can let certain social mores go.
Wild thing.
If I'm queuing for a bus and there's loads of seats on the bus and somebody pushes in front of me, I'll let them get away.
Really? Without an eye roll? What about a little fidget?
Those vicious, evil eye rolls will cut them in two.
Right.
Yes, you know that'll teach them to never push in again. I'll give them a tut and an eye roll.
I was talking to my wife today, who's was faced with a situation in Waitrose, actually, where somebody had jumped in front, and this person started talking to the person behind them, or I think they were with somebody. Oh, it's terrible how somebody... So loud enough for Jane to hear, because Jane was just behind him, but not loud enough for the queue jumper to hear, because obviously that would be terribly embarrassing. I mean, it's a terribly cowardly approach, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it goes to show how we don't like public displays of any level of confrontation in this country, which is the queue is a very powerful manifestation of that. That even when somebody breaks those rules, we are loath to really call them.
We're very loath indeed. Let me ask you a few questions. Have a bit of a Q&A session.
Oh, I like what you did there.
Q&A. Well, so let's say, Roy Field, that you're in a queue and somebody's sort of fumbling with their wallet and turns to you, or she turns to you and says, would you like to go in front of me? What do you do? How do you feel?
Let me think about this. You put me on the spot. The thing is, a lot of these rules, David, we know intuitively, don't we? You haven't necessarily thought about it, intellectualized it, but you just know how to behave. So,
go with your gut, Roy Field. Go with your gut. Oh, so we'd like to go in front of me. You're looking at Harry. We'd like to go in front of me.
Well, I presume I'm going to say the wrong thing now.
You normally do. I'm being aggressive.
I'm going to step in.
Is that what you're going to go for it? Now, I would have said, I would have disagreed. That's obvious. There's no wrong and right answers here, Roy Field, but you're wrong. So I would have said, but if you go, you've lost appalling face by accepting that. I mean, it's absolutely impossible to accept that. You have to say, no, it's fine. You can accept such an offer.
Well, no, you know what, David, as in most things, you are right. And first off, I would say no, or at least gesture somehow to say, no, you're fine.
Hard.
Right. But if they're going to really fanny about.
If they really insist, yes, then you go for it. Yeah. Okay, so are you allowed to leave a queue and return?
Oh, absolutely. But it only depends on the length of the queue, though. If it's a really relatively static queue. So if you are, let's say, if you're in an airport lounge, right, and you're queuing to check in, and that queue is 20 people long, it is totally fine to say to the person behind you, look, I'm just going to nip to the loo and whatever, I'll be back. That is totally fine, right? If you are queuing up for a cash point machine, absolutely not. You can't do that because that queue is only three or four people. You've got to just, wait your turn, full stop. You cannot say, hold this, I'm going to nip into the shop, buy something, come outside, and then still expect your place to be there.
I totally agree. I think the difference here is if you say something, if you're strong enough minded to say, hey, I need to leave the queue and I'm going to come back. And as you say, if it's not too long, then actually you can get away with it. But if you just leave the queue without saying anything, there is no way you're getting back in. You then...
No. Absolutely not. If you've gone for more than, 5 minutes,
that'd be an outrage. But actually, we should do that, Royford. Next time we're in Notting Hill, walking down to Hugh Grant's door, we should join a queue, say, oh, I've forgotten something. I'm just going to nip back. Do you mind holding my pace? They say, yeah, sure, no problem. And then go and look around the corner and watch and see what happens. Wouldn't that be fun?
Fun is not the three-letter word I would use
them.
For it.
It would absolutely kill them. Anyway, I mean, don't think they would look around.
It would be interesting to see.
It would be fantastic.
You and I have very different views of what constitutes fun, David. Very different.
So I've stopped recording. What do you think of as fun, Royfield?
Not watching people's reactions to me disappearing out of a queue. It's not high on the list, David. I'm telling you.
It could be the most rubbish answer I've ever heard. But I think we generally agree that we're very nervous in queues. No, people, generally speaking, don't speak up. If somebody jumps the queue, they'll tut, they'll purse their lips, they'll roll their eyes, they'll fidget, they'll mutter something. But by and large, they won't call them out. True?
It's not generally going to cause a fight. However, somebody jumps in the way of you on a Friday night, 2 a.m., and whilst you're getting a kebab, right, fights might well ensue.
In extreme situations. But I think the point I'm making is the English get very worked up about it. It matters. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, they won't react.
I think you're correct.
But there are a couple of exceptions, just one more sort of little round of exceptions I might throw at you. So there is, all the rules go out the window when you get to the festival queue. Do you know what I mean by the festival queue?
Is that the one where it's snakes?
What is a snake? Where is the snake?
Well, specifically, let's say airports.
Right.
When you're going into immigration or even to check in, that queue is never straight, is it? It's straight, then it kind of bends, goes back on itself, and it bends again and whatever. Is that the festival queue?
That isn't the festival queue. What you may be talking about here is cues with ambiguity, where I would say that where there's an ambiguity in a cue, you know, it looks like it splits, I'm not quite sure where it starts. That is the only occasion when cue jumping happens. The reaction is just as bad. People still touch, purse their lips, pretty violent reactions. The festival cue, I'm thinking about things like Wimbledon, okay?
I know where you're going with this.
Or it's Harrods sale day and everybody's queuing up waiting for the doors to open. Then you get a bit of a party atmosphere. Somebody sings along. Some people have got their tents and they've been out overnight. People are allowed to leave the queues. You know, do you know what I mean? Queues suddenly become a happy place. People will talk to each other, express themselves, that kind of thing. Things they would never do in a normal queue. True?
This phenomena has been... good heavens. Sorry, David. You should never get distracted and look at Facebook whilst your really podcasting cool. partner is like...
No, I'm really looking boring at evening with David Crowder, so I've just got a good set of bananas with me just so I can keep myself amused. Great. This has been...
But anyway, so what you're describing is the I'm waiting for the new iPhone queue, isn't it? Or the new Star Wars movie is coming out and people get there 4 days earlier and they pitch up with a tent. And yeah, it's like Blitz spirit, Dunkirk spirit. And everybody hunkers down because you're having the similar deprivations and people share biscuits with you and a hot flask of tea and all that type of thing.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. In those circumstances, all the rules are off, yeah? Everything's different.
Well, no, because you still can't queue
actually, that
jump.
Is true. You still can't queue jump. And in fact, if you queue jump at a festival queue, you'd die. But the point is that what people don't normally do in queues in England is talk to each other, look at each other, have a nice time. And in festival queues, they might do that sort of thing.
I will give you that.
So I've warbled on long enough. Now, you're going to say, okay, well, queuing, you know, I know what you're going to say, right? You know, because I can read your mind.
It's maybe because this is our second recording of this. So
I know what you're going to say to me. You're going to say, look, there's nothing particularly English about queuing. And I'm going to explain to you why you're wrong.
No, that's not actually what I was going to say, because I think it's one of those things which, whether we started queuing first or not, it's one of the things which the world associates with us and we associate with ourselves as well. So it is English. That's what I'm saying. But however, you expected me to go, oh, no. The Singaporeans Q2. So let's go with that. Oh, no, David. Right? Other countries Q as well. Why is
this
English?
Last time you were livid with me for even suggesting the very idea that queuing might be English. Livid.
No, David, there are rules.
There are rules. Yes, we're going to drop the rules. The rules is a rubbish idea. No more rules. I don't like this. It's though you've had a frontal lobotomy or something. Am I allowed to say that? That's probably out of the action.
Go on. Tell me why this is English.
Because, as I said at the beginning, it's the golden key to understanding English behaviour, or at least one of the key drivers of English behaviour. There is one word that explains much of what the English do, and that word is awkward. We are socially awkward. We're very uncomfortable. This makes us look, you know, a bit hypocritical because, you know, we're nice to people when what we actually want to do is slash, burn and destroy them because we're awkward. We don't know how to deal with confrontation. We'll do anything. As I think you said earlier, to avoid confrontation. And no point do we want to do the wrong thing, not because we are particularly good people, but because that would make us stand out and that would be awkward. We do not want to upset or annoy anybody because that would be awkward. So we are fair and reasonable by and large because we don't want to annoy anybody. We are respectful of other people's feelings. I think people quite often say that because if we're not, then we might be forced into a real conversation and have to say real things that mean real things and express real emotions. Awkward. Queuing is all about social awkwardness, Royfield. I put it to you, that is why queuing should go in the cabinet.
Isn't this more an example of a relative equanimity in society?
That's a nicer explanation, isn't it? So Another quote I picked up is somebody saying, I think what you're saying, that a man in a queue is a fair man. He's minding his own business. He lives and lets live. Mm-hmm. He gives the other guy a chance. He practices a duty while waiting to practice his own rights. He does almost everything an Englishman believes in doing. That kind of going, expressing mm-hmm. your view a bit more?
I mean,
it would mm-hmm. be lovely. I'd love to agree with you. And I think there is a sort of fairness element. So I think our social awkwardness actually leads to some very nice attributes. We don't like to upset other people. There is this concept, I think, called of negative politeness. We will try very hard not to intrude on somebody else because we don't want to upset them. We want to give them space and respect them. Whereas in other cultures, they'll have a positive politeness. You'll say, oh, look, you know, there's something wrong, you know, and in a way that would drive me out the wall. But, you know, other people would find very helpful. I think there's a lot about that, about queuing. You know, we don't want to cause a fuss.
So, okay. So I'm trying to think of different types of queue. And there's definitely one which you get on the motorway. So you're traveling down a motorway. The motorway's got three lanes. You see a sign a mile before the cones appear, and it very clearly says, this lane is going to become no more in about a mile.
Yeah.
Right. Now, you can very clearly see, right, that people are starting to peel off from your lane and filter into the other lanes, okay? You still cannot see the cones, but people are starting to do it because most people are like you, David. They like rules, yeah. right? They like to be told yeah. what to do. At what point do you, traveling in the lane which you know is going to end sooner or later, but you are overtaking the other cars, at what point do you then pull over?
Right. It's one of the most annoying things in the world, you know, apart from, again, terminal malaria. The thing is that I would start queuing very early and feel quite cross about the people who are going right to the end. And I hate myself for it because why? Why? It's so dumb. You know, there are two queues. You both queue up in the two queues until they come to an end. Sometimes there are even signs that say, please queue, use both lanes. And still, people mm-hmm. start going to the left and feel very insulted when the people go down the right-hand lane. Utterly dumb. Next time that happens to me, I will get out of the car and take my shoes off and throw them into the bushes and get back in again. So what would you do?
I'm one of these people that I will just keep going until the cones actually form a diagonal across my lane. And then I will then slow down, turn to my left, smile, and then just very gently edge, but really slowly until somebody behind me stops.
Right. How did I know you were going to say that? I mean, you are so right. On this one, Royford, you are so right to do what you're doing. And I will try to be brave enough to do that next time. Because, of course, there are two lanes until one of them stops. So fair enough.
And the other thing is, as well, I think us English, we seek out a queue. You know, we really do. We really do. You know, we don't want to be part of any kind of rabble. If we see somebody stood, clearly looking ahead, not around or whatever, we go, oh, I'll go and stand behind them because they know something that I don't know, and I need to see what they're seeing, and I'll wait my turn.
I must admit, I'm not sure I'm that keen. Actually, I did see a stat that apparently people wait for 6 minutes in a queue before giving up. And they're unlikely to join a queue with more than six people. I think that's true.
If that's what the study says, far be it from me to say no, because I haven't studied this.
But look, I think we've delighted our audience enough, Royfield, because we said we were going to be more disciplined. My contention, Royfield, is that queues are an essential part of the English character, that they are a demonstration of social awkwardness, which lies at the heart of most English people. And therefore, that queuing should go into the cabinet.
I would say they're a symbol of social cohesion, and begrudgingly, they probably do deserve their place in the cabinet. But
the listeners,
you know,
will decide, Royfield. That's what they'll decide, do. David. They'll decide. Right. Very good. So we should have our roundup from your football edition, which is interesting, actually, because we're recording this so much later. We don't normally, we haven't normally loaded something up and be able to talk about it. But actually, you're struggling a bit at the moment on your football thing, aren't you?
No, it's going to go in the cabinet. There's no question of that.
So we're going to hear about what Luke says about what everybody else said on Facebook about football. So here we go.
Destined to go straight into the cabinet of things that made England without needing too much discussion. Catherine was first out of the block with her comment that neatly summed up all that was to follow. How can it not be in the cabinet? Michael also put it nicely with his comment, it's about as exciting as watching paint dry, but it certainly belongs in the cabinet. So, like Magna Carta, football was waved through and will soon perch on a shelf of its own once Jennifer works her image manipulation magic on her magnificent cabinet. Vote-wise, it was fairly conclusive. We have 67 votes for It's as English as Cricket. A paltry 15 votes for Rowena and her gang, who cared for it not one jot, as it's not a beautiful game. And 9 votes for the fence sitters, who'd rather call it a draw. I made a few feeble efforts to get a discussion going. I even stooped so low as to try to goad our American listeners by dissing their beloved sports. It kind of worked, and I got severely admonished by Alan and Thomas for daring to insinuate that soccer wasn't big stateside, when their women's teams have long been world beaters, and even the men have regularly qualified for World Cups from the famously competitive CONCACAF group. But the what's the best sport in, like, the whole world debate is almost as fruitless as who's the best player, like, ever debate. They are both pretty subjective and largely based on where and when you were born. Though baseball, Robin, really? Marilyn, who has a bit of a history of snoozing, was worried that she had missed the bit that covered football's working-class English roots, which is why she thinks it should go in the cabinet. One of the best things about the discussions we have on Facebook is the agonising about how to vote and the terms of the poll. Philip and Kevin didn't want it to go in the cabinet, as they don't see football as a particularly English, but they do like it as a sport. Tom gave poor Royfield a yellow card for hypocrisy, for opposing cricket but supporting football. Then Dave took it one step further and called a point of order to ask whether the discussion revolves around what makes England unique or what makes England what it is. Royfield, heartily backed by Lisa, brought some sanity to this discussion to point out that the promo clearly states that this isn't about what makes England unique. Hopefully you will have just heard the definitive answer on the question, as David said it was going to be covered. Not for the first time, I agree with Michelle, who proposed we let everyone read into the title what they want. How very sensibly postmodernist. I think we might have had a bit of a blurring of the boundaries between David's stable of podcasts, as he got us all hunting for William's snipe, but I'm sure that's from a discussion that started off on another page. Next, we'll have Royfield asking whether Gladstone was one of the 10 prime ministers who made England conquer the world, dum-de-dum. They certainly are a creative and productive pair. And as ever, on behalf of our Facebook group, I send them many thanks for another great episode. Now, Rowena, about the offside rule. The way it works is that a player is considered to be offside if the ball is passed forward to him and there is only one or no player standing between him and the goal. Normally, this player would be the goalkeeper, but if there's moved to a more forward position, then two goalkeepers players would drop back.
Okay, brilliant. I think I've been very rude to you today, Royford, and I'd like to formally apologise.
You did that last time.
Did I?
You did.
Okay, so I'd like to formally apologise again.
Apology accepted. I'm queuing up this apology next to the last one, David.
All right, putting it in the box. Okay, so that's it. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Do come onto Facebook and vote and talk about whether queuing is quintessentially English, one of the things that makes England as she is. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Goodbye from me and...
Goodbye from me.
And these are the things that made England.
England and St. George!
These are the things that made England.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.